Stanley Coren is a professor of psychology and an expert on human-dog interactions. He's written several books about dogs. The latest is The Modern Dog, a joyful exploration of how we live with dogs today. Dr. Coren's busy life in Vancouver is occasionally pushed to a fraying edge by the antics of one of his dogs, a Nova Scotia duck-tolling retriever. It made me wonder why anybody would carefully shape a dog's breeding to create a crazy canine.
Actually, we have been shaping dogs to fit our culture, our lifestyle, and even our technology for at least 14,000 years. This is really sort of seat-of-the-pants behavior genetics, where people would sort of mix and match dogs until they got the qualities which could be passed on genetically. And we see this changing all the time. You know, before firearms, the hunting dogs were predominantly hounds. Hounds work alone. They run down the game and they kill it. They find it and kill it. And the hunter's job is just to get there before the dogs eat all the game. But later on, when we had firearms, we developed pointers. Pointers work very slowly. And, of course, those firearms were these muzzle-loading beasties. And, you know, they took forever to load. And, you know, you got one shot, maybe, if you're lucky, 50 yards. So you needed an animal which would find the game and then freeze, indicating the place of it, until the hunter got there and got close enough to get that one good shot. As the weaponry got better, you know, we developed different beasts. I mean, we had wonderful repeat shotguns which could fire more than one round. You know, you could hunt behind spaniels, who are just, you know, totally undisciplined hunters, but it's quite exciting to hunt behind them. And then when the Industrial Revolution came in, well, of course, all the good hunting land became farmland or became built up. And so hunters were sort of stuck working on scrap land, you know, marshes and that kind of thing. So we developed the retriever, whose job was to sit with us in that little blind that we've got and wait until the ducks fly over and not make a sound and pay attention to us until we knock the duck down. And when the ducks became scarcer, we developed the newest version of the retriever, something called the Nova Scotia duck-tolling retriever. And this little guy's job is to run up and down and act crazy. And, you know, the ducks look over there and say, hey, something's going on. They fly over to investigate. They come within the size, the range of the gun. You knock them down, and they turn into retrievers.
You have one of these, I'm told.
I do have one
so
of these.
So you know what the experience is of being attracted by this crazy behavior.
Oh, yes, yes. And I know the experience that when you marry a very quiet, proper lady from the prairies, how it drives her absolutely to distraction. But, you know.
Well, in some ways, that's both a success story and a disaster, isn't it?
Well, the idea that we are training a dog to have that extra excitement seems like a down kind of a thing. Because, you know, basically retrievers are really quite quiet, generally speaking. But we've done that before. I mean, you know, the early terriers didn't bark very much. Their job is to go down into the ground, and, you know, after a fox or a badger or something like that. And, you know, they very often got stuck down over there. And if the hunter didn't know where they were, then you couldn't find your dog. You couldn't retrieve him. And they used to have special shovels and forks called terrier forks to sort of dig your dog up.
I remember hearing a story, one about dachshunds, that they have strong tails because they had to be pulled out backwards from holes they'd gone down.
That sounds like a wonderful piece of folklore. I love it. But, you know, so every single terrier in the world now, you know, comes out of the womb wearing a T-shirt which says born to bark because we selected them for that. So you have to watch out. Each dog has its own purpose. For example, nowadays we have many, many more people who are living in cities and that sort of thing, and they want little companion dogs. So we have now developed wonderful lines of some very, very sweet, sucky-faced dogs. You know, some of them are reasonably well-known, like the Cavalier King Charles, but we've been developing some marvelous new variants like the Coton de Tulier and the Havanese. And these dogs, their basic job is to be a love sponge. Their basic job is to sort of be empathic toward you, to put up with your caressing, to respond to your mood changes. And, you know, given the cost of psychotherapy, I mean, that's a really cheap way to keep sane.
Of course, there's some dogs that you look at and you wonder why in anyone's mind they would think it would be a good idea to develop them. I mean, think about bulldogs. They can barely breathe, let alone do anything. And there are dogs that get tired after walking for 15 feet. I guess they're just mistakes in a way.
Well, in some respects, What you're looking at over there is the difference between form and function. Okay, you can think of there being a great divide in terms of doggy folks. There are those people who are in the dog fancy, okay, and they're interested in what the dog looks like more than anything else. And you know, that's what Westminster's about, and Crufts and that sort of thing. And then there are the people who actually form the vast majority, who are really interested in what the dogs do. So, you know, the bulldog has been, you know, partly hurt by the dog fancy, who wanted those sort of, you know, incredibly large heads and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, he was bred down from the dogs which actually fought these bulls as part of a sport which was called bull baiting at that point in time. And the idea was behind them was they actually wanted a super placid dog, which could be a gentleman's companion, look like a ferocious beast, but just basically, you know, hang around when he sat in the men's club and smoked a cigar.
Just thinking about modern dogs, it seems to me most of them these days are pets, which I guess you could say is a pretty important job all on its own.
Well, actually, nowadays, dogs are serving some wonderful new functions. You know, it used to be the case that we had an extended family, so we were not living too far away from our aunts and uncles and grandparents and everybody else. So you always had social support. Nowadays, you know, people live on different coasts and your family's scattered, and very often, you know, you don't have this sort of huge circle of absolutely bonded support, which we used to have. And people are living longer now. So, you know, spouses are dying and that kind of thing, and you end up living alone. And dogs are now starting to fulfill some wonderful functions for that kind of life. And they are actually improving both physical and mental health. Take a look at the research on seniors, because seniors are the ones who usually end up being socially isolated. You find out that if they own a dog, they are much less likely to require medical services, lots of medical services. And they are 4 times less likely to develop clinical depression. Depression is a real problem in elderly individuals. And there's a wonderful study coming out of the University of Pennsylvania, which looked at men who had had their first heart attacks and then followed them for several years. And they found out that the men who own dogs were more likely to be alive. And we now know the reasons. If you pet a familiar and friendly dog, there are physiological changes. Your breathing becomes slower, your heartbeat becomes more regular, your muscles relax, a set of corticosteroids in your blood starts to go down. In other words, you show all of the signs of reduced stress.
And it's amazing you think about this. The first reaction would be, well, of course. It means if you have a dog, you go out for a walk more often, which is probably what they needed before they had the heart attack.
Plus the fact that, you know, for some of the smaller dogs, you know, some of the men owned very small dogs, and, you know, their walk was maybe around the block. But if they pet the dog and you get that physiological reduction in stress, that's good for the heart, because we know that stress and heart problems are related. And the beauty of it is, the effects start within 60 or 70 seconds of the time you start to pet the dog. If I want to give you a pharmaceutical which will relax you and do that sort of thing, something like Prozac, it takes 3 or 4 weeks to build up to its full level. So here you've got this instantaneous de-stressor, which is immediately available. And in fact, you know, it works. I'll give you an example. There's a very neat little study which looked at couples who had dogs and those who didn't, and basically found that couples who had dogs were less likely to get divorced. And the reasoning behind the researchers is, you know, you come home, you've had an absolutely ratty day, and you want some, you know, tender, loving care. And you walk in, and your partner's had an absolutely ratty day. So if you demand some care, it starts a fight. But instead, you know, if you have a dog, you walk in, and there's Lassie saying, love me, love me, love me. You pet the dog, remember, de-stress, so your stress level starts to go down. You don't make demands on your partner, so there's no cumulative buildup of tension in the relationship, and life goes on. I mean, that's not bad for a little bit of kibble.
Stanley Coren's latest book is The Modern Dog, a joyful exploration of how we live with dogs today.